Welcome Back to Nostalgia. Dave, you're in our podcast, What's Going On in Pop Culture Right Now. We have three albums to get to this week. Zero Base One, A.G. Cook, Gunna, new TV show, X-Men 97 out in full from Marvel on Disney+. And of course, a new film, new blockbuster, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, out in theaters. Gotta get into all that. Make sure you subscribe, youtube.com/nostalgiapod, linktree.com/nostalgiapod. See the links below. Get the best of 2024 Spotify playlist linked below. Let me know what's good, and let's get into it. What's up? Welcome back to Nostalgia. Dave here with a review of Zero Base One's third EP, You Had Me at Hello. Zero Base One, one of the new male K-pop groups, only debuting last year. And I think in a fourth generation of K-pop that's largely been dominated by women at this point, it's good that a successful male group has presented themselves recently. Of course, apart from in Hypen, it's been kind of quiet on the male front the last few years in terms of new groups. But Zero Base One, after forming from a reality series and, you know, debuting on one of the smaller labels, Wake One, probably best known for managing the girl group Kepler, Zero Base One have, I think, become like a fully fledged, like, legitimate group. I would say that Zero Base One's third EP, You Had Me at Hello, is solid. It doesn't really change my opinion of this group thus far, but I like just about every song on the release. I think in general, this is a group that brings a lot of energy, and even if I think on this EP, a lot of the songs are lacking, like, really, like, standout, amazing hooks, amazing choruses, like, nothing really goes above and beyond on this release, the floor is just high enough with Zero Base One that even their so-so songs are pretty solid and certainly quite listenable. It's clear that this is a group still kind of growing into their sound. Right now, they're largely sticking to a lot of contemporary K-pop trends, which is not necessarily a bad thing because, again, they're doing it well. But I think with future releases, a future full-length album, I think more growth is to be expected. Overall, though, I like the EP. I think the lead single, Sweat, nice highlight, as well as the latest single, Feel the Pop, which has a music video out now. Feel the Pop stands out to me because it's very, I think, light and fun, but still has that fast drum tempo. And then Sweat has these really big drum hits and a very fun chorus. These are not like A1 K-pop bangers to me, but they're both really fun songs that definitely fit that summer vibe as they're coming out now. Track one, Solar Power, a bit of a rap banger. The electro production definitely stood out to me, but I thought the chorus was just okay on that one. Dear Eclipse, very fast tempo, and definitely the most Korean of the first three songs. A lot of English in the first two. Feel the Pop has a lot of English, which is not a problem, but I thought Dear Eclipse really stood out as like a really solid, fun B-side, you know. Sunday Ride, the keys kind of come out of nowhere in terms of the production. You don't really hear any keys at that point. And then a really short but sweet rap verse on that. They're not really much of a rapper, Zero Base One, at least as far as what I've heard thus far. But they're solid when they do it. Hello is a simple ballad. That's my least favorite song on this. Doesn't really stand out as anything special. And then the last song is track seven is actually just the sped up version of Feel the Pop. But it's really quite sped up. Like, it's actually like a significant BPM increase, almost like a hyperpop remix to a K-pop song. Pretty cool, definitely a different version, and I think a fun remix to include. So yeah, overall, like, I think I'm wait and see with this group. I think Zero Base One are doing just fine for what they're doing. To reach the next level, though, they need to kind of unlock, I think, some kind of sonic progression to really stand out as a great group. So we'll see if that happens. Again, they're still young. They've been debuted less than a year at this point, so more to come, I'm sure, as they're, alongside Kepler, the preeminent act on the Wake One label. But let me know, what was your favorite song on You Had Me at Hello? How are you feeling about Zero Base One these days? And for more K-pop reviews, more music reviews, subscribe, and I'll see you next time. What's up? Welcome back to Nostalgia. Dave here with a review of A.G. Cook's third album, Britpop. A.G. Cook, you know him as the founder, face of the now-ended, defunct PC Music label. PC Music, famous from, you know, this whole swath of the 2010s, really, as an experimental pop label, never making like blockbuster music from the commercial sense, but getting a lot of love on the internet, developing a really rabid and loyal fan base over the years, working with numerous artists, the most high profile, of course, being Karolyn Polachek and, of course, Charlie XCX. A.G. Cook's work with Charlie XCX is among the most celebrated work from Charlie, and I think to the happiness of many, myself included, A.G. Cook is very much involved in Charlie's upcoming album, Brat. That being said, PC Music concluded last year. You know, one of the last releases on the label was A.G. Cook's like Ty Slaughter collab project, Soft Rock, which was pretty cool. And now Cook is releasing another album under his own name. And this is not just any album. This is, in fact, a triple disc album, 24 songs, an hour and 40 minutes long. Ultimately, to me, though, A.G. Cook's third album, Britpop, this triple disc length to it, and even if it's three distinct discs in terms of sonics and vocals and lyrical sentiment, to me, this is a very indulgent record. Like, I think you have to be very much in that PC Music bag. You have to really be into this type of music because this is a long record. And I think there's lots of fun stuff here. You just got to find it, you know, because 24 songs is a lot of music. And I think to PC Music loyalists, they're so happy that they got this, right? And they're very pleased. But I think to me, I had to dig around a little bit more and find some of those best songs. You know, at times, I think Britpop is incredibly energetic and the repeating loops and the adding new sonic elements as the songs continue to progress. It's very much on brand for A.G. Cook and for PC Music. So it's giving you what you want. I think some of the songs with more noticeable vocals are the ones I would lean to. You know, Charlie XCX popping up on the title track Britpop, as well as Lucifer. A.G. Cook himself singing in the middle part of the album. The song Without, a tribute to the late Sophie, certainly stands out from a lyrical sentiment. Though I'm curious from the really hardcore PC Music fans what they think of the album in terms of it adding to the lore of Cook and PC Music, and you know, those three websites set up for the three discs. There's a lot of stuff here. So if you really want to dive in and this is a scene you've been into for the past 10 plus years, I'm sure there's a lot here for you. But otherwise, I think you have to kind of pick and choose because it's going to genre switch. It's going to give you experimental pop. It's going to give you dance pop. It's going to give you noise rock and fuzz rock, and it's all kinds of music. So you kind of have to find what your lane is, I think, on an album of this breadth. Nonetheless, though, A.G. Cook is clearly one of the most unique figures in pop music, and I'm very curious with the conclusion of PC Music if Cook will choose to branch out and work with more and more artists. Because again, to this point, he hasn't worked with anyone super big, and that seemingly is by choice because of his talents. And I'm curious if that will change moving forward or depending on what he's interested in. I know as a British guy, he has been living in the U.S. for some time, so maybe that'll lend itself to more collaboration. We'll see. A few other notes on some of the songs. I thought Heartache was pretty cool, kind of like a sci-fi vibe. Serenade, I enjoyed. Like the kind of consistent, like non-looping vocals popping in. That was pretty fun. Green Man, noticeably, was like random acoustic out of nowhere to that point. On the negative side of things, I thought Greatly was incredibly grating. Like, that was just a hard one to listen to be honest. But Bewitched right after that was honestly pretty hard. Like, the guitar with the drums, like, definitely the most rock leaning song to that point in the track list. I think Lucifer is more fun from a Charlie performance, and that is actually one of the most traditional songs on the album. And I think whereas Charlie on the Britpop song is really just kind of repeating a vocal melody over and over again, Lucifer is like a fully fledged like traditional pop song. That one's pretty fun. But yeah, I think to me at this point, like A.G. Cook's someone I've admired and respected for his obvious contributions to alternative pop music over the last 10 plus years. And in terms of the individual songs he does make across his three albums to this point, he's very much kind of like a pick and choose artist for me. But I know to some, they're a lot more loyal to those album experiences. So I'd be curious how people react to an album of this length that are big fans of his work to this point. Let me know if you're one of those people. But for more music reviews, subscribe, and I'll see you next time. What's up? Welcome back to Nostalgia. Dave here with a review of Gunna's fifth album, One of One. The Atlanta rapper is back with another big album after his comeback album about a year ago last summer following his release escape from the YSL Rico case and everything that has let out on Atlanta hip hop. It's been a long few years for Gunna, to say the least. I think a lot of people know this at this point, but having his first number one album come out, Deus Forever, and then immediately get embroiled in a very serious legal case, and then being able to escape that legal case to the chagrin of many, accusing Gunna of doing things that maybe he did or didn't do. Is he being disloyal to Young Thug, etc., etc.? Not going to go into the YSL stuff at this point, because Gunna has really, I think, come out of it unscathed in the long run, because last year, the comeback album, A Gift and a Curse, featured none other than Gunna's first number one single, Fuck You Mean. And Fuck You Mean, absolute banger. Obviously, there's a TikTok catchiness to the song, but I think just in general, like, that became a very popular song, one of the most popular rap songs of 2023. And that's not, of course, Gunna's first big hit. Of course, Pushin' P, before all this shit went down, was a big hit as well. And I think Gunna, to his credit, has really built himself up into the kind of modern, like, trio at the head of Atlanta rap. You would put him, of course, alongside Lil Baby. I think Gunna has long since branched out of Lil Baby's shadow and is now truly one of his peers. And, of course, the other being 21 Savage. And if we discount all the Atlanta rappers, you know, over 40, I think 21, Baby, and Gunna are kind of running the scene down there, especially while Young Thug is still, you know, behind bars and, you know, going through a trial. To me, Gunna's fifth album, One of One, is just more of the same. I've never viewed Gunna as an album artist. He is certainly someone very capable with his flow and is a really solid rapper. But if I'm not getting, like, a really big hit from Gunna, like a Pushin' P, like a Fuck You Mean, I really just kind of pick and choose the songs I think stand out. I'm not hearing a banger of that caliber on One of One, so what I'm left with is frankly a lot of very samey, repetitive beats on an album that certainly feels long by the end. There's some solid songs, like Gunna has, I think, a solid floor as a rapper, and he's in particular a really strong guest. Look at his recent spot on the Tyla song Jump, a recent hit. You're never really going to go to Gunna for introspective lyrics. There's a lot of opportunity for him to get more introspective given everything that's happened in his personal life the last few years. And I gotta say, some of these trap beats are quite dull. And even though Gunna has good flow, when the beats are dull, repeating a flow stands out a little too much for me, for my taste on One of One. So I thought this was fine. There's nothing overtly bad about the album, but frankly, I was just a little bit bored by the end. And it doesn't really change my opinion of Gunna, which is that he's not really an album artist. Frankly, I feel the same way about his peer Lil Baby as well. 21 is the only one I think really stands out in Atlanta at the top right now in terms of album artists. So it's not the worst thing in the world. Gunna is very successful. He streams very well. But I think to reach the upper echelon or reach the next step of critical acclaim, I think he needs to take his next step in terms of his artistry. And whether he does that or not remains to be seen. He's a very successful artist nonetheless. But yeah, ultimately, I think my favorite song on this, it's really hard for me to pick. I think Neck on a Yacht stands out early on as a nice highlight. The title track, One of One, the way the bass hits, the flow is very tight. That one's good. The song Tree stood out to me on the beat side because it has like violin like out of nowhere. Almost none of the albums, none of the other songs rather have anything like that. Frankly, none of the guests are that inspiring. Offset's okay. Normani's barely on the song though. Let It Breathe, Roddy Ricch, I thought was pretty solid, but yeah, it's just okay. Let me know though. Did you like One of One a lot more than me? If so, please let me know why. And for more rap reviews, more music reviews, subscribe. And I'll see you next time. What's up? Welcome back to Nostalgia. Dave here with a review of X-Men 97, the new Marvel animated series out in full, 10 episodes on Disney+. This, of course, is a continuation of X-Men the animated series that aired from 1992 to 97. Thus, we are 27 years in the making. This is also the first X-Men property from Marvel Studios since they acquired the film rights to the franchise in the Fox deal. I'm a big fan of the X-Men. I've seen all the films. I didn't really watch too much of X-Men the animated series, kind of aired, you know, as I was coming alive, so a little before my time. But I watched a lot of X-Men Evolution, one of the follow-up series. And in general, X-Men is my favorite Marvel property. I think it's one of the most enduring Marvel properties for a bunch of reasons, and I'll get into that in a little bit. X-Men 97 kind of has had a tumultuous time to the screen, with the creator and co-writer of the series Bo DeMeo being fired from the series before X-Men 97 premiered, and that's despite the fact that season 2 is on the way and season 3 is in development. That being said, I enjoyed X-Men 97 quite a bit. I think it's a very familiar return to the vibe of 90s X-Men storytelling. Even though this is clearly a cartoon made for children, it's a very faithful adaptation of the core X-Men characters that people have come to know. Now, X-Men 97 really just throws you right in. So it's going to pick up plot threads, going to pick up character development from the animated series. It's not really going to hold your hand. There's still a lot of expository dialogue. It's almost always very plot heavy in its narrative. So it's not the most sophisticated storytelling. I think X-Men 97, it's a fun return to X-Men because it really puts front and center why X-Men is such an enduring brand and, to me, the best Marvel property. And that's the timeless struggle of the X-Men, a marginalized group of people that society rejects and doesn't appreciate. The real-world parallels from the X-Men are just as relevant today as they were in the decades prior. X-Men as a storytelling device, still really great. And I think everyone's very excited for Marvel Studios and the MCU to bring in the X-Men, as they've begun to hint at is coming soon. I think we definitely need that breath of fresh air on the film front. And the X-Men characters and the crux of why that storytelling is so strong, that would really be a really big boost to a currently aimless Marvel Cinematic Universe. It is fun to watch X-Men 97 outside of any MCU continuity, unlike some of the other MCU animated stuff that's coming up soon, like the Spider-Man animated shows. It's fun because we get Marvel cameos from non-X-Men characters, and you don't have to worry about MCU continuity. We see Captain America. He actually gets some lines on this series. Of course, Spider-Man had a big episode in the original X-Men animated series. Doctor Doom makes a cameo in 97. There's a bunch of other familiar faces. Just kind of fun. Like I said, it's very plot-heavy, and as a result, this series doesn't really spend too much time with anything. I don't think there's a whole lot of character development on this, and it's hard because it's such a strong ensemble, a large ensemble, right, of characters, familiar characters, characters people know very well, but there's not a whole lot of real character growth on this. I think the closest we get is the love triangle between Rogue, Magneto, and Cable before Cable dies. I think that was certainly interesting. Stuff with Storm losing her powers, the relationship between Jubilee and Sunspot. On the other side, though, I thought the Madeline Pryor, Jean Grey, Cyclops issue, as it is, was pretty muddled, pretty rushed. Like, I thought it was kind of ham-fisted the way Madeline Pryor was dropped on the show. Similarly, Bastion showing up as the big, bad, overarching, like, arch-villain of X-Men 97 felt very abrupt. Honestly, Mr. Sinister at least had been developed and is, you know, a relic of the animated series as well. I don't know. Ultimately, I think he's got to be into these characters and down with the plot, because like I said, there's a lot of plot. I think the Genosha attack and the Cable sacrifice, that hits very well. The reintroduction of Xavier off in space with the Shi'ar, I actually think that works pretty well, especially once we spend time with Xavier using his powers and transporting people to the astral plane. It's all amusing enough. But then you kind of get the three-part finale, and it ends in an unsurprising place. You know, I think the age-old battle of Xavier's methods versus Magneto's methods and the lack of faith in humanity from Magneto's side, and then seeing that lack of faith made good by humanity's actions, right? Like, it's very classic X-Men, where season one leaves you when we're in the future, in the deep past, with Apocalypse. You know, it's all over the place. Characters are split up. Be curious how multiversal and time skipping season two gets. Of course, Cable is already a big aspect of the season. Really, it's just film comic books. You know, I think that's the best way to approach this series, and probably the most appealing thing if you're a fan of the X-Men. So, yeah, X-Men 97, long time coming, but pretty solid. More than anything, I just want X-Men on the film front. Like, the X-Men are awesome. Can't wait. But yeah, let me know, what'd you think of X-Men 97? What was your favorite episode? I think my favorite episode has to be, I believe it was episode 3 or 4, when Jubilee and Sunspot go into the 16-bit Motendo. That was really clever and well done, and the closest the show gets to a, like, non-plot heavy episode. That I thought was pretty brilliant. But what was your favorite episode? And for more TV reviews, subscribe, and I'll see you next time. What's up? Welcome back to Nostalgia. Dave here with a review of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, the 10th Planet of the Apes film. The first, it's still been 7 years since War for the Planet of the Apes from Matt Reeves came out back in 2017. This also is the first Apes film since the franchise has become a Disney property following the Fox acquisition. Matt Reeves was not involved with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, nor was, of course, Andy Serkis, whose motion capture as Caesar was quite well loved. Kingdom sets us far in the future from the time of the Reeves era, 300 years forward, and Westball of the Maze Runner films has come on the helm as the director. I'll be honest, I love Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. I thought this was an excellent reboot and really reiterates why the Apes franchise is one of, I think, the most underrated blockbuster franchises we have. Such intelligence, such nuance to its storytelling. Kingdom is so thematically rich, it makes the franchise feel so fresh. Whether it's ambiguous rooting interests or a villain that's not painted with a really broad brush, I think there's just a lot here. Of course, the visuals are excellent. Motion capture technology has become just so amazing, as we all know at this point, and the performances are really great. Owen Teague as the lead Noah, Kevin Durant as the villain Proximus, also Peter McCann as Raka the orangutan. Amazing performances for a film that doesn't quite have as much spectacle and action set pieces as the Reeves era of Apes did. Kingdom, I think really to its credit, does a great job with the world building, great job with the drama. I was quite compelled. I think this is a great reboot and an excellent launching off point for this franchise to pick back up once again. Speaking to the world building, putting us 300 years, many generations beyond the conclusion of the Caesar storytelling really advances the world, right? You have the dystopian nature of just humanity being subsumed by nature, all these plant-covered skyscrapers, collapsed bridges. Really cool. I think when you meet Raka, he's living in a overgrown airport terminal. It's just a really cruel visual. Proximus's camp is an overturned ship tanker of some kind on the coast. And on top of that, having like Noah's Eagle Clan being this very, I want to say spiritual, but kind of spiritual group that is very invested in maintaining aviaries and taming and living with eagles. And they're not really a violent crew. You know, I think their customs, as you get introduced to them in the beginning of the film, when it comes back, I think there's some rewarding moments too with that as the film concludes. It's fun to have, you know, advanced further in the timeline, but still have like this Caesar of it all be like a continuity piece with the storytelling, and Raka being someone who subscribes to the true Caesar teachings, and then Proximus being someone who's, you know, calling himself Proximus Caesar. Being a Roman Empire fan in the literal sense. Raka being so philosophical, but then also having Proximus being philosophical on the other side of the coin, someone who wants to keep apes strong, and his desires for conquest are really based on his own self-interest, but his own self-interest in, you know, advancing ape kind, and his, you know, quest to bust into this, you know, human like silo vault on the coast. He's seeking the technology of humanity of old so that, you know, humans can take a leap or apes can take a leap forward technologically and intelligence wise. He keeps William H. Macy around to read him books because obviously he can't read, but he would love to learn how to teach apes how to read. Like, it's pretty fascinating. And as you spend more time with Proximus, who we don't actually even meet until an hour into the film, you know, it's one of those like, you know, he had some good points type characters. Maybe his methods weren't the best, but like you understand. And I just, the refusal to not make Proximus just the big bad wolf of the movie, I think is very intelligent. And Noah has some real true sense of conflict and, you know, uneasiness about which path to go down because he wants to protect his clan and rescue them from Proximus's control. But he also can kind of see the other angle. That leads us to the human character May, played by Freya Allen. And May is like not much of a character for a lot of the film, but gets to kind of do some exciting stuff. And you understand her motivations where she is trying to prevent apes getting stronger, especially someone like Proximus. But, you know, she has some difficult conversations with Noah at the end of the movie. And again, I just find it like quite dramatically rich because there's a lot of gray area, there's a lot of ambiguity to who's right and who's wrong in a lot of these conversations and in the decision making. And you get a really exciting, I think, end to the film for May's piece, which of course is great setup to the end of the film, where we realize that the sat phone key that she steals from the vault once they get in is going to be used successfully to communicate across the world between, you know, human settlements that have survived underground and stuff. Very exciting for the advancement of the film. Ultimately, is Kingdom, with that thread there at the end, perhaps setting up similar conflicts that we've seen in past Apes films? I'm sure it is, but I don't mind like going back to that well in a certain sense, because again, I trust this franchise to portray some ambiguity and some gray area. And even if overall things might have a familiar like gleam to them, I just think it's operating at high enough quality, like the floor is high, to that it's not much to criticize. I mentioned the mocap, ONT, Kevin Duran, Peter McCann, really great. If I have one nitpick about the film, I did think it was kind of funny how they are able to get into the vault, you know, in Act 3, just because, yeah, they scale the cliff, but surely, like, Proximus's crew would have scoured that cliff face and that mountain area to make sure there was no other way in. Surely they would have found that, right? Nonetheless, it's really cool once you go into the vault, right? Just seeing, like, the vestiges of humanity's past is always really fun in dystopian storytelling, right? And, like, you know, you're watching it as a human, right? And, like, you're not sure exactly who you're rooting for in that moment as you watch that vault ultimately get opened up and destroyed, despite all the resources inside of it that could be used, whether by humanity or by the apes. And of course, we know May is able to get the sat phone key, which is clearly the most valuable thing in it. But yeah, I think it's a really fascinating franchise to this day. And I wasn't necessarily expecting that, you know, because on one hand, I was shocked to look back on it being 7 years since War for the Planet of the Apes came out. On the other hand, though, it feels like a great time for this to kick back up. And Wes Ball, to his credit, you know, coming off the Maze Runner films, this guy's got some juice now. You know, of course, famously, he will be making the Legend of the Zelda movie for Nintendo. And I have a lot of faith that actually will happen, because Nintendo is actually really jumping into filmmaking following the great success of Mario last year. So that's exciting. But I think Ball has more than proven that he has some chops. And that's it seems like a great choice. I would assume that would mean that he's not necessarily going to be attached to the next Planet of the Apes film, the sequel to Kingdom, which I assume we will get. It's looking to open in the, you know, over 100 million globally. And it's an expensive film, 160 million budget. Not the most expensive we've seen, though. So I think this movie will be successful, although the China box office is looking quite light, even for our new normal when it comes to those expectations. So we'll see on that front, but I'm pretty confident. And ultimately, I think word of mouth will help support this movie, because I think it's really quite engaging, even if it might be a little smaller scale than some of the, you know, the Reeves films were. Nonetheless, I love Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Let me know, what did you think of it? And for more movie reviews, subscribe, and I'll see you next time. All right, that's going to do for the pod this week. Next week, we have a new film, Back to Black, the Amy Winehouse biopic starring Marissa Bella from Industry. Looking forward to seeing how that goes. And then we have a trio of high-profile albums coming out. Rhapsody on the hip-hop front, and then the pop front, a new album from Zayn and a new album from Billie Eilish. I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about with that. Make sure you subscribe, youtube.com/nostalgiapod, linktree.com/nostalgiapod. See the links below. Get the best of 2024 Spotify playlist linked below. Let me know it's good, and I'll see you next week.